American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Wednesday, March 9th, 2005. And this is Newsreel, your source for independent media news that will give you the edge against the core political tyranny that is, in fact, right now, at this very moment, trying to enslave you. You can read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal, and you'll know it'll be time to turn the page when you hear me say something like, holy cow, I can't believe the drug companies are as evil as they are. Now, there's a few things we got to get into before we get into the news of the day. We got some feedback we got to go over. I got a sort yourself out question, which is quite probably the weirdest one I've had yet, so I'm probably going to have to throw it out to the internet because, wow, some crazy stuff going on there. Last night, I managed to go down and talk to some friends of mine who wear green a lot, and that was kind of cool, so big shouts out to them. And, you know, it's important that we remember that what we're doing here with the show is not just bitching and whining. I'm not just, you know, telling you this stuff so you can get depressed and hide in your room. This is my whole point of doing this, is so that you feel better informed when you go out and confront the issues of the world. Newsreel is a program for fighters, not one for people who, you know, hide a lot, that sort of thing. There's all sorts of programs out there for you to do that, like, you know, Friends and Hollywood Squares and God knows what else they've got on television these days. Got going straight into some feedback here. Dear SK, could you please respond during feedback? Sure. Here I am responding. Larkin Rose is a guy from the Tax Honesty Movement who, for years, has been asking questions about taxes to the government. Well, finally, they've responded by bringing him to court on an indictment. My question to you is, in your opinion, should we bother asking questions of our government? And is Larkin totally nuts for daring the government to take him to court? I don't see how he can possibly win. Thank you so much, BlitzCon. Well, you know, of course, there's two parts of... there's actually a couple questions there. Should we bother asking questions of our government? Of course we should. Of course we should. The government is... we put the government in power. If we are asking... If we're not able to ask questions of the government, then what's going on? Of course we should be able to ask questions of the government. Now, is Larkin totally nuts for daring the government to take him to court? No, Larkin is a fighter. This is what he's doing. He is going to fight for what he believes in. And there comes a time. There comes a time when sometimes you do have to go up against insurmountable odds. There comes a time when you do have to take a stand and say, wait a minute, this is wrong. And you have to sign yourself up to be on the front lines, to put, you know, your life. And it's more sometimes than just, you know, the act of getting shot or something like that. Sometimes you have to deal with, you know, your financial life. You have to risk it all. You have to stand up and say, no, I believe this is wrong. And come what may, you have to stand there and take that. This is what being a fighter is really all about. Now, is he doing this? Is he nuts for doing this? It could be argued. I mean, he's got his own motivations, and I don't think he can win either. But the point is that one man did dare to say no and stand up against it. So I think that if you're considering doing something like this, you need to be aware of the threats that are against you. If you're going to try to take a stand against the government, well, you know, chances are you're going to wind up in a jail cell. Chances are it could screw up the rest of your life. I mean, this is something you need to be aware of. And those are big issues. Those are big issues, man. It's hard to deal with the fact that you could wind up going to jail. If it was just like, you know, you get shot and killed, well, it's over real quick, right? But, you know, if you wind up, you know, suffering and being in prison and, you know, God knows all the things that will happen to you in jail, I mean, there's a lot of things there that you want to consider. So if for those of you out there considering fighting the government and whatnot, I am usually a larger fan of, rather than having one or two people sacrifice their lives in a huge way, you know, and being destroyed by, you know, the core political pundit, I'd rather have like an army of infected people who, you know, slowly infiltrate the core political and promote change from within. This is sort of my general guideline, but I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. It's hard sometimes because the major weapon the core political has against all of us is what? It's frustration. It is frustration. It is a feeling of helplessness that we all have. And this frustration That's some deadly shit, man. You got to watch that because you'll see all the stuff that's going on. You see all the stuff that's happening with Pfizer. You see all the stuff that's going on in day-to-day life, and it's hard. It's hard. You got to get up in the morning, go to your shit wage slave job, and you feel like, you know, you don't matter. Nothing you do matters. You know, so you try to distract yourself from time to time with God knows what, everything from anime to video games to you name it. I'm guilty too. Everyone does it. We all have to do our part to try to, you know, fight to make a difference in the world. And it's hard. It's hard. It's the daily grind, and everyone thinks you're weird. You know, so there is the attempt to just finally take a stand and say, no, I'm going to fight this, and I'm going to fight this way. And, you know, you wind up gambling and losing a lot when you do that. And is that important? Yeah, sure it is. I mean, this guy's a hero. This Larkin Rose guy, he is a hero. But he will probably not be recognized as a hero, and he's probably going to be an unsung hero for quite some time. But you and I are talking about it and talk about what he's doing. I mean, he's trying to get a message out. He's trying to talk to people. He's trying to convince people that the government is, in fact, corrupt and stealing money from human beings. I mean, the government exists to, you know, control people. That is what the very role of government is. So do I think that he's crazy for doing it? No, he's just a fella who... He probably just doesn't give a shit. He's probably just moving forward. Well, he does give a shit. That's the point. He's willing to, you know, fight the battle, go to war, and maybe give up everything he's got in order to make a point. And if that's something that you feel that you want to do, well, if you're under the age of 25, I seriously suggest you just hang 10 until you're about 25, because there's no sense fucking up your life when you're 17, especially in today's political climate. So just, you know, my own personal guideline. If you're thinking about going to war with the government, don't do it if you're under the age of 25. Which some people would say, well, that's a weird thing to say. But anyone over the age of 25 will go, yeah, that's a good call, Sean. Got another piece of feedback here. Hey, Sean, just yesterday I opened wogcoalition.org. Now, there's a few other WOG sites out there. There's, you know, you do a search for it. You'll find it. And you see there's guys who post in the forums, and they got... I have not officially endorsed any of these sites. People have sent me emails saying, I'm not a WOG anymore, blah, blah, blah. I'm leaving the organization. There is no organization. Okay, I am not the head of this organization. I am merely the guy who kind of, you know, pushed everything in this sort of direction and started the whole, you know, match to flame that created the directional chaos that is the WOG movement. Now, I am not the leader of this thing. I like the idea of being a standard bearer. I had somebody send that in to me. I'm like the guy with the flag marching forwards, and that's probably about as close as it is to me. Nobody actually listens to me anyway. I have no method of enforcement. I just kind of, you know, sit here, do my thing, and try to broadcast news to make a difference to people who are like-minded to myself. Now, some of these like-minded people have decided to open a website. One of them's called wogcoalition.org. I'm letting you know there's a website called wogcoalition.org. Now, you can go there and take a look at it. If you like it, great. If you don't like it, great. I'm not endorsing it. I'm just letting you know it exists, and it's a like-minded thing, so it could be a resource for you. But, so anyway, back to the email. Just yesterday, I opened wogcoalition.org to the public. It seems to be going pretty well so far. WOG World is not around anymore. I guess that was another website. And I thought that the WOGs still need a forum and a site of their own. Thus, WOG Coalition at Arm. I hope you check it out and maybe even announce it on Newsreel later. And that was Clipper who did that. Now, how long this website's going to be around, I don't know. I went and looked at it. It looks okay to me. You might want to go there, check it out. It's a resource available for you. On to sort yourself out, dear friend. So... what do I do to protect myself against the 2012 magnetic field reversal? Holy shit. I see a great subject for patrolling season 3. Please share your platform of alien wisdom. Sorry, no links today. This is all around your human being, DS Otaku. So, that's a good one. Shit. Okay, first of all, there's a lot of people talking. I mean, I listen to Coast to Coast. I've got a lot of information. I scour the web. And there's a lot of people going off about 2012. For those of you who aren't aware of the shit that's supposed to happen in 2012, the whole planet's supposed to take a dump in 2012. This all comes from the Mayans. The Mayans started all this nonsense where they were, you know, saying, hey, you know, we did the planetary alignment. And they've got all this, you know, stuff where they have their calendar. Very advanced culture. But they say that the world is going to end in 2012. Now, when you look across the pond there to the Chinese, they have this thing called the I Ching. And the I Ching is this system of divination which works with rhythms of the universe and stuff like that. Now, there's a mathematical formula which was discovered by a dude by the name of Terence McKenna within the I Ching. And it's systematic as well, and it has to do with dates and times and stuff like that. But the I Ching also, using this system, terminates in the year 2012 as well. Hindus, the Hindu religion in India also have some shit going on about 2012. And they talk about these four different seasons, blah, 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 blah. So there's a bunch of stuff going on all about 2012. Everybody's waking out about 2012. You know, and now scientists are saying that around 2012 there's going to be a magnetic pole reversal, and now we're going to run out of oil in 2012. That's another time, and everybody's all trying to tie this towards 2012. This is where everyone's going with this. Now, you got to bear in mind that all of this shit is theory. Okay, it's all theory. We've got some stuff. There is some evidence pointing to this, but I put it to you that the size of these events, these aren't like, you know, an earthquake or something. These, we're talking like on the level that they're discussing here on these sites about 2012. We're talking about cataclysmic, world-changing, rapture-style stuff, okay? There's not a lot you can really do about it. I don't care how much tinfoil you wrap around your head. You're not going to be able to deal with the 2012, you know, pole reversal. You're not going to be able to be immune to that. That's going to, if something's going to happen, okay, if it's going to be a pole reversal, whether aliens are going to land, whatever the fuck it's going to be, the whole point is how do you deal with that? How do you get ready for that? Well, what the fuck do you think patrolling is? I mean, get your kit squared away, get everything in order, and watch and shoot. It's shitty and it's scary, and I don't know what's going to be coming down the pipe, but no matter what it is, if you got your gear squared away, if you got your kit all sorted out, you should be just fine. So, beyond that, you know, of course, there's the usual things, like read everything you can lay your hands on and try to find out as much information as you can. And beyond that, you know, do research on the web, check some everything. Don't just go with guys who have dreams and prophetic visions and shit like that, because they're a dime a dozen online, especially regarding 2012. And everyone's, you know, got a book to sell and shit like that. Now, maybe there's something to it, maybe there's not. But this is something that, you know, if you're going to look into this and be concerned about this, I put it to you, there's not much you can do about it. So since there's not much you can do about it, just get your shit together and watch and shoot. That would be my own personal guideline. On to the news. Now, you remember about a week ago or so ago, there was that chick who came forwards and was saying that being a vegan was like, you know, was tantamount to child abuse. It was totally unethical to be a vegan. And not that people who are unethical, of course, are terrorists, and it goes from there. So, you know, it's so unethical to be a vegan, and it should be charged with child abuse and so on and so forth. Well, I got a bit of a follow-up story based on that. You may have heard about a study claiming that feeding a vegan diet to children is, quote-unquote, unethical. What you may not have heard is that the study was paid for by the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Oh, what a shock! What a shock! You know, this is why now it's not enough that you have scientists to come forward. Now there's all this deception in there, too. I mean, no wonder there's so much frustration. What's more was the study itself was depraved and showed no regard for human life. Not Nazis experimenting on captives. The cattle industry manipulated very slightly the diets of starving African children. Not to benefit the children, but try to produce some scientific finding which justifies meeting. They say a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. Well, even more knowledge when it's wearing a lot of respectable titles is more dangerous. One of the most irresponsible and flat-out ignorant statements of recent days, Dr. Lindsay Allen, she's the one who made the statement, currently of the U.S. Agricultural Research Service, told the annual meeting of the American Association of Advancement of Science, AAAS, that a vegan diet was so lacking in necessary nutrients that it's tantamount to child abuse, is what she said. Was this based on carefully conducted research? No. Was it based on structured study with control groups and meticulous monitoring at children ate? No. It was perhaps based on a large number of children eating a normal vegan diet who were found to have a greater than usual risk for illness. Was it based on that? No. Her basis for this bizarre and completely unfounded declaration was her experience in Africa. So there was no study. It's just she went to Africa and saw this. Children who've been eating nothing but corn and beans were given a little meat and their health improved. Not children on a normal, healthy, vegan diet. Children have been eating nothing but corn and beans. Almost adding anything to their diet would have caused improvement at that level. So, you know, where do you go to get the truth on this information? You get this broad. She comes out, you know, Lindsay Allen. She's all claiming that vegan diets are unethical. And then, you know, this truth comes out there. This isn't going to be running on mainstream. Lindsay Allen was on the BBC, man. She's up there, you know, ranting and raving. Of course, the cattlemen are going to spread that all over the place. And for people to point out that, yeah, by the way, the cattlemen, you know, they paid for the fucking study. So obviously the study's going to be biased. You know, it's you got to follow the money everywhere now. It's like, who do you trust? Who do you believe? You know, if you're going to check some everything, suddenly the amount of work that's involved in educating yourself just increases exponentially. It's very, very frustrating. That's why I believe you should find sources that you trust, sources that don't have a biased opinion. Sources that answer to you, like myself, for example. And I will try to give you the news as best I can. And, you know, when I find stuff like this, I'll relay it back. It's scary stuff, guys. Scary stuff. I mean, you know, and also, there's nothing. You can't even take what I say at face value because I'm wrong all the time. I'm wrong often. Try not to be. And when I am wrong, I usually, you know, do another announcement, try to follow it up and whatnot. But it's some scary stuff, dude. There's a lot of stuff going on out there in the world right now. And now it's turning into an information war and a disinformation war. So, you know, I think you can trust what I have to say, but I'm just going off the information I'm getting, too. So it's all checksum. But, you know, again, if something sounds fucked, like that whole unethical vegan diet thing, that sounded messed up. That sounded just completely wrong. So when you see stuff like that, you know, maybe it just comes down to following your gut. Now, I've noticed lately that there's a lot of, you know, very subtle racist sort of dissent going towards India. Now, there's a lot of fucked up shit in India. It's a very dirty country, very poor country. You know, there's some clean parts and whatnot, but generally a lot of the population over there lives in a lot of poverty. So now, you know, the corporations are going in there and they're outsourcing a lot of jobs and tech work to India and stuff like that. And so there's a lot of resentment that's going towards India brought about by corporations. It shouldn't be any resentment towards India. It should be resentment towards the corporations. But of course, they just shelf that off on the Indian people. Well, there's a lot of really smart people over there, and apparently there's a test that was done over there about a thing they're calling infect-obesity, where they're saying that a virus is responsible for obesity. Check this out. Chickens are special to Michigan-based professor Nikhil Dundurar, for it was a viral infection among chickens that led to his breakthrough research that obesity is at times triggered by a virus. Now, there's a series of tests that were done in India as well to back this up. But this guy who did this was in India. Or, pardon me, was in Michigan. Interesting, the man who gave the world the you could be fat because of a virus theory is a vile parl lad. He first, whatever that means, a vile parl lad. He first proved that the virus obesity linked in a laboratory in UDCT, Matanuga, for his doctoral thesis in the early 90s, predictably using chickens as guinea pigs. Obesity has many reasons, from genes to metabolism to hormones. We want to draw attention to the fact that certain viral infections could also lead to obesity. Now, this is interesting, says Durandahar, who was in the city to talk about his theory at a conference on obesity. Nobody pokes fun at chronically ill patients, but an obese person is the butt of many jokes. The belief is fat because he can't keep away from the dinner table. Nobody is really ready to consider that it could, in fact, be a disease. He recently received a grant from the prestigious National Institute of Health to research the infect obesity as a in this is what they're calling this field is now infect obesity worldwide. Seven viruses have been identified for causing obesity in animals. We can't infect people with the virus to prove the theory, though research has established that human beings too are similarly affected. Three viruses were identified by Durandahar's team in Wayne State University of Michigan. Even in Mumbai, researchers are now working on creating a database of children who, after typically being ill for the first 5 years of their lives, start becoming obese. Thereafter, says endocrinologist Dr. Shashank Joshi, associate professor at Grant Medical College and JJ Hospital. So, there's a lot of information here talking about, you know, being obese as a virus. Now, obesity is rapidly becoming a huge problem in the United States. It already is a huge problem, actually. It is rapidly becoming, but it's killing people. You know, people are dropping dead because they're obese. And, you know, I know some people that are obese. And it's kind of a scary thing. You know, you look at this and you go, well, how did this happen? You know, and the temptation right away is to blame them, is to say that it's something that they've done wrong. And nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, doesn't it make more sense to have all your lab rats nice and pudgy and fat and obese so that they're not too active, so they don't run around, so they don't go to protests? Doesn't it serve the core political interest better to have short-lived, obese, mass consumer workers? I mean, it seems to, so there wouldn't be much draw to prevent that, would there? Where's the profit? Where's the advantage? That's the kind of stuff that I look at. Now, I know that there are people out there in the world working for banks that have some idea about security, but I'm just wondering what those people are doing when you get a bad idea of the day like this particular one here. Internet bank machines. Wells Fargo & Company has announced this week that it has completed a five-year project to web-enable 6,200 ATM machines in 23 states. The Windows-based infrastructure is designed to allow Wells Fargo to update and add services such as new language and envelope-free deposits to ensure its entire network can work remotely. The San Francisco-based bank said it installed more than 3,000 online stations in nearly all of its 6,046 branches. The web ATM machines and online stations are part of the company's strategy to integrate all channels, stores, phone, ATM, and internet. Jonathan Velling, head of Wells Fargo's ATM banking, said the biggest challenge was the amount of internal software development needed to migrate the bank's ATM backend system operating system from OS 2 to Windows. Another hurdle was tightly integrating ATM backend systems with other business units such as branch and online banking. We want to make sure that our ATMs are integrated with every other channel, so that when I do a deposit in a branch, I want to be able to go to an ATM immediately and see that deposit, Velling said. The other hurdle we faced was less technical, the machines themselves and the service model out in the field. The machines installed weren't up to the processor speeds we needed, so I had to physically go out and swap out those machines. Bill Sentinek, of Senior Vice President of Technology in Wells Fargo's Services Division, said the bank used J2EE to develop the middle layer that integrates Windows-based ATM platforms with its back-end system. The bank uses XML to communicate between various backup platforms. Now, first of all, why this bank is saying anything about what their ATMs are based on or, you know, what their back-end system is. Maybe it's not actually based on this, because it seems weird to me that they'd be discussing, you know, what system it's based on and how they did it and everything, because that's precisely the kind of information that you wouldn't want leaked to anyone anywhere. So, you know, maybe all this information is in fact a lie. And there is nothing that says that the news media cannot lie to you. There's no laws in place to prevent the news from lying to you. So if the news decides to just broadcast propaganda, there's nothing illegal about that. So when you look at a story like this, it seems a little odd. This is the kind of story that makes me go, how does this work exactly? Because why would any of these banks be telling people about, you know, what they're doing to put their ATM machines online? Like, the minute these things get online, okay, they're now susceptible to attack. When it's a closed system that you can't get to, it's still, I suppose, susceptible to attack. But the minute you can hook it up so that it's online and everything's on the web, well, you know, I mean, it's only a matter of time before somebody reverse engineers the work that you've done. And granted, Wells Fargo has some really, really keen security people working for them. I know a couple of them. And that's cool, you know, that they can do this, but I'm just saying that you're creating a possibility for a variable by putting these bank machines online. What is your risk versus reward here? Do you really think the reward is worth the risk that you're putting up? Just sort of a personal guideline, I'd want to look into that. Now, last week, I did a news story talking about how Alan Greenspan got up and said, whoa, you know, everything's getting fucked up here. Our financial situation is getting way out of control, way, way, way out of control. And when Alan Greenspan says that, you know, people tend to listen. Now, the richest dude in the world, I guess, is Billy Boy. But Warren Buffett was a dude. I've read some of his books, and he's Mr. Stock Market, old money tycoon type guy. Okay, this guy, and his whole world is based on, you know, the dollar. Everybody listens to him when he says invest. When Warren Buffett says something, people listen. Now, billionaire U.S. investor Warren Buffett has warned about the extent of U.S. trade deficit. Mr. Buffett has made the comments in his widely read annual letter to shareholders of his Berkshire Hathaway holding company. He warned that the U.S. trade deficit, which totaled $672 billion, or 484 billion pounds, last year, meant a knockover reliance upon foreign investment to the United States. Mr. Buffett said this foreign investment could become too dominant. Other countries and their citizens now own a net of about $3 trillion of the U.S., he said. Sharecroppers is another idea for who's like involved with this. This is what sharecropping is. Using an analogy from the 1930s, Mr. Buffett said this meant that the U.S. could be heading towards a sharecropper society, meaning that a great many Americans could have to pay a large proportion of their future incomes to absent, and in this case, foreign landlords. Well, history just repeats itself. So, you know, you get some foreign country comes in, buys all your land, then rents your own land in your own country back to you, and you wind up becoming what? Slaves. We're right back to before the American Revolution, only now it's not just England. Now it's going to be the entire fucking world, where everyone else is going to come in, dump in all this cash, because America's government is selling it right down the river. Because their allegiance is not to America. Their allegiance is to the dollar. This is, you know, this is what happens when you have a financially driven, motivated, God-worshipping culture. Okay? Not that they worship God, but their God is money. That's the whole point there. If you worship the dollar, that is what you will seek, and that is what you are controlled by. You know what I'm saying here? Does anyone else see this? Obviously, there's a lot of people very, very concerned about this. There's a lot of people very concerned, but he who has the gold makes the rules. So it seems that the people with power and the money are selling, you know, America down the tubes just to get more power and more money. And where does that leave us? Well, it leaves us getting ready to go to the camps. That's where it leaves us. But that's precisely where our trade policies, supported by Republicans and Democrats alike, are taking us. That's what Warren Buffett said. Warren Buffett. Okay, this isn't fringe anymore. When Warren Buffett stands up and says, guess what? We're heading towards a tyrannical international slave state within the United States. When Warren Buffett says that, now granted I'm paraphrasing slightly, but that's what he's saying. You know, sharecropping in the 30s is a very scary concept. Go do some research on this, and that's where we're going again. History will repeat itself. So maybe, you know, the way we got out of that sharecropping, maybe that's the solution for what we have to do now. Just a thought, just talking out loud here, you know. We'll see where this goes. And, of course, researchers at UC Berkeley are developing micromechanical flying insect cams. Now, there's being bugged, and then there's being bugged. I'm sorry, I had to make that pun. But realistically, when you have flying insect cameras, at some point, like, you know, realistically, we're going to have to stop, you know, pretending that the cyberpunk nation and surveillance state is not here. We're going to have to stop, you know, it's not so much fun anymore to look at conspiracy theory, and now the time has come to act. Now we really do need to encrypt everything we have. Now we are going to need to set up, you know, actual hardware to destroy our hard drives in case our computers get grabbed. We have to make sure that we get rid of, you know, material that can be used to charge us. Maybe the books on our shelves shouldn't be books on our shelves anymore, just in case, you know, because that's the first place they go when they kick in your door. They go straight for the bookshelf to try to find out and make you into a terrorist. This is the first thing they do. And now we've got insect cameras. And this is something that is in demand, obviously. An electrical current makes a set of piezoelectric strips virate at 150 times per second. The strip in turn drives a pair of wings. The device, slash creatures, are experimental today, but as MEMS, microelectric mechanical systems, technology matures, they become not only commercial, but as Kevin Keeley might put it, fast, cheap, and out of control. These creatures are part of a trend that started many years ago with the opening of spy stores that sell private citizens parabolic microphones, audio bugs, miniature cameras, and other artifacts of clandestine arts. Now, quite often in your community, you probably have a spy store, and I'm really thinking that rather than going severely overt with a lot of our tactical gear, which we do, maybe that's something we should look at as well. Perhaps I should consider that for patrolling. We should start looking at a lot more of the clandestine arts. The trend is democratization of surveillance, and it constitutes a much bigger threat to privacy than anything the governments might do, according to this. Imagine swarms of miniature insects and insect mics, each controlled by different hobbyists, converging onto our homes, cars, dorms, and other places where privacy is assumed today. Now, I like the spin they're putting on this, because they're making, you know, the guy at home with his parabolic mic into the enemy. Okay, my question here is, my answer to this guy in the article here, while he's going off saying this, I'll finish the article and we'll go back. It's ironic that Big Brother, who can, in principle, be controlled by legislation, may prove to be a paper tiger. Nice fucking spin. As anyone with a young male sibling can tell you, the real threat to privacy usually comes from inquisitive little brothers. The Little Brothers. There's a name for an organization. We're all the Little Brothers. We're, you know, those closet hobbyists. We're the danger to society. Okay there, Mr. Paranoia Spreading Writer Guy. Why on earth would the hobbyist be sending bugs and parabolic mics into his neighbor's house? What is the motive? What's the motive. Why is there any reason why they would do that other than to test? You know, sure, there's a certain amount of voyeurism that could be involved there. You know, you fly an insect cam into some female's dorm, you get all porkies about it or whatever. I mean, okay, there's that. And not to say that that's not a huge violation of privacy. I definitely wouldn't want that. You know, you wouldn't want to, I wouldn't want to, you know, see, you know, my friends as a couple on an internet porn site without their permission. That would be terrible. You know, I mean, there's certain things that do have to be made up, you know, to make sure that you're not going to be exploited. However, to put a spin on it and say that the hobbyist and the guy who's learning about, you know, surveillance and surveillance techniques in order to protect himself, perhaps maybe even to protect his neighbors if he's in an apartment block. I mean, I think of myself as a dealing in the realm of houses, you know, small neighborhoods that way. But realistically now, people who own houses are getting further and farther between. We're now in different apartments and they have, you know, larger apartments they call condominiums, which are still apartments. And everyone's all living in, you know, very dense situations where everyone's, you know, can hear what everyone else is doing. These are real problems. And quite often, there's one person within a complex who will go, you know what? I, as sort of a benevolent being, am going to make sure that everybody's privacy is looked after. Because that's your responsibility. With the knowledge in these kind of things comes the responsibility to not only look after yourself, but look after those, if you can, who are not quite as informed as you are. Now, in a little bit more local news, this is something that came down the pipe. Smokehouse, as of Rant Radio fame, the most powerful man in internet radio, Smokehouse, is getting the boot. Art and Connie Lindsay Jr., this is his parents, bought a home along the rolling hillside wooded countryside of Airport Road to get away from the hustle and bustle of city life. The narrow two-lane road is lined with beautiful trees and flowers in the spring. Stately homes are nestled along the roadway. The road literally drops from under passersby like a roller coaster as it follows the rugged terrain. But times, they are changing for the Lindsay family. Peoria County, you know, Smokey, you should have wrote this. Peoria County and some surrounding cities want to carve a new road with the hills extending through the hills, expanding Airport Road from Tuscarora Road to Illinois Route 24 across to Illinois Route 9. The project would widen Airport Road to three lanes with enough right-of-way for later expansion to Pfeiffer Road to Tuscarora Road, and then extend the road, blah, 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 blah. It's all about road work here. An intersection would be built and various improvements done to Illinois Route 9 going into Pekin. These are fucked up names, man. The couple feels the new road will eliminate any hope for privacy they move there for. They viewed the plans at Airport Road Extension Feasibility Study Meeting Tuesday, Oak Grove School in West Bartonville. A second hearing will be held at Pekin Public Library, 301 S 4th S Pekin from 4 to 7. Thursday, and to allow these residents to have input. So they're widening the road down there. And if the road winds up, I don't know if it's going to be moving and going to be actually forcing them to move out of their house, because if their house falls into that, you know, sort of, oh, sorry, your house is too close to the road, and therefore we're going to have to, you know, move you. If the road's just widening, but, you know, I mean, whenever somebody like Smokehouse winds up in the news, I think it's something that should be noted. And realistically, it is your neighborhood. You live there, so should you not have a say? Maybe, you know, if enough people could show up at this thing at the Pekin Public Library, 301 4th Street, Pekin, from 4 to 7, Thursday, which would be day after tomorrow, maybe they could stop it. You know, they're allowing them to have input, but I wonder just how much input you really have. When the government decides that they're going to widen a road for the greater good of all, as they'll say, do the residents actually have any say? This is one of the reasons why I wonder what the point is in even buying a house. Because realistically, once you buy a house, you don't really own the house. You have to keep renting the house through a form of taxes. So maybe it makes more sense to buy something a little bit more mobile, like a ship or a boat or maybe even a motorhome. But I prefer to, you know, go with a boat myself, being a coastal type of lad. But, you know, there's a link there. You can check it out. Maybe give Smokey an email. Try to figure out what's going on. See if there's anything we can do to give him a hand with that, because that sucks a lot. Another thing that sucks a lot is Gattaca reality, which is now becoming even more of a reality than ever before. Commercials hawking prescription drugs directly to consumers have driven doctors crazy for years. Crazy and like a fox. A lot of these guys are getting kickbacks from the companies when the guy comes in and says, "Hi, is the little blue pill right for me?" Realistically, there should be no reason why commercials should be hawking prescription drugs directly to consumers. How is that possible? A commercial does not give the consumer educated data okay, in order to make a decision. Furthermore, they're there to advertise a drug. Take this, you'll be great. And then they go to the doctor and say, give me this drug. The doctor goes, well, I don't know if it's right for you. Well, I'll go find a doctor who will give me that drug. And out the door they go. That's what happens. This is quite easily one of the most unethical things I've seen for a while, up until now, of course. Now comes a new kind of medical marketing that is already troubling some medical professionals. At-home genetic testing. An increasing number of online startups are marketing tests that can show predisposition to any number of maladies, from breast cancer to blood clotting. They're exploiting the blizzard of genetic discoveries reported almost daily since scientists published a complete map of all the human genes 5 years ago. The tests are cheap, easy to administer, often just a cotton swab inside the cheek, and the results are available online, cutting out the visit to the doctor's office. Plus, the companies note, the test results aren't usually jotted down on official medical histories, which keeps sensitive information away from insurance companies. Now, there's something beneficial about that. I'd like to know what my particular, genetic predisposition is, but you can bank that if the individuals are going to be doing this, pretty soon companies are going to be doing this. We're empowering patients with knowledge, said Ryan Fellan, who recently launched the San Francisco-based testing company DNA Direct, which is true. They are. However, who's going to jump on board with this? The company currently offers genetic testing a la carte, with prices ranging from $199 to $380 for a predisposition to cystic fibrosis, blood clotting, iron overload, heightened risk of lung and liver disease. Testing positive can help customers make lifestyle changes to prevent the onset of disease, the company says. Well, sounds pretty, nice. Sounds like a good thing. Sounds like something can be positive. This week, in a small but dramatic move validating the popularity of online approach, DNA Direct will begin offering two popular breast cancer tests created and conducted by Myriad Genetics, the most visible player in the field of predictive medicine. Now, this is a scary, scary field. As these types of, home genetic testing become more and more prevalent, what will the consumer do? When people can, does that mean that, why don't we just start swabbing out our dates? If you're considering getting married, why not, take a little bit of spit, run some genetic test on this potential partner that you're considering breeding with to see if there's any genetic predispositions, because you know what your genetic predispositions are. Pretty soon this starts looking a lot like eugenics. And is this paranoid? Am I overreacting here? No, because it's going to happen. That's what people do. People are like that. They're going to want the best advantage they can for their children. And once this sort of technology and predictive medicine becomes more and more mainstream, eventually more and more insurance companies will begin to use it. Pretty soon, your employer will begin to use it. Is there any legislation to prevent the employer from using predictive medicine to see your prones for getting sick, or whether or not maybe they'll have to pay out their pension a little earlier? How about these governmental positions where, you work so long and all of a sudden, you contracted, Crohn's. So now we're going to give you long-term disability. But if they'd have known beforehand that you were susceptible to, say, Crohn's disease, maybe they wouldn't have even hired you in the first place, and you'd wind up getting fucked before a disease even struck. So you spend your whole, healthy times unable to find work before the disease strikes, and lo and behold, the disease strikes. Oh, you're super fucked. I guess you get to crawl away in a corner and die. This is the dark side of predictive medicine. I'm not saying that the whole thing is bad. I mean, it's technology, it's knowledge. We have to use it. We have to utilize it, but we have to make sure that we, keep a tight leash on those unethical applications for something like predictive medicine. In the good news, just in case you didn't know, the peer-to-peer networks have won. Fans of file sharing have been handed a significant victory by the U.S. court. Federal appeal court judges have ruled that makers of peer-to-peer software are not responsible for what users do with their network. All together now, they said the structure of the networks made it impossible for the system's creators to exert control over their users. Hoorah! The decision is a blow to the U.S. movie and music industries. Fuck you, cowboy. Who are seeking damages for copyright infringement from its file-sharing firms. Dun, dun, dun. In their ruling, the judges said the case had parallels with older cases, which said video recorders should not be banned just because some people put them to illegal ends. Dun, dun, dun! This is yet another weapon we're going to be able to use to our advantage in the future. History has shown that time and market forces often provide equilibrium and balancing interests, whether the new technology be a player piano, a copier, a tape recorder, a video recorder, a personal computer, a karaoke machine, or an MP3 player, wrote judges in their opinion. Thus, it is prudent for the courts to exercise caution before restructuring liability theories. Wow, it's nice to know that there's a few judges out there that still have got some kudos. Fred von Lahnman, who represented Streamcast in the case, said the same principle that people who make crowbars are not responsible for robberies that may be committed with those crowbars. So it's exactly the same thing with crowbars, only I use guns. But crowbars, of course, are, you know, they're a little bit more PC. The ruling was the latest in a case brought to the U.S. Music and Movie Makers against, brought by the U.S. Music and Movie Makers against the Grokster and Streamcast file sharing systems. It was made by the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals and upheld a decision made in a lower court. The judge said it should be up to Congress rather than the courts to change copyright laws. Hear, hear. One factor that led to the U.S. court to rule in favor of Grokster and Streamcast was the lack of central servers that coordinate file swapping activity. So, nice try, guys. But do you think the RIAA and the MPAA are going to just wander back and lick their wounds all quietly and cry in the corner? No. They're already mounting their next attack. They're all, I mean, this is what the core political has. I mean, this isn't just one person. This is a machine. This is almost like a religion to these people. These people are fanatics. They're cash fanatics. And they will not stop until they destroy our ability to access information. This is the face of the enemy. I know it well. Now, in Kathmandu, Nepal, as everyone knows, the king of Nepal, because I covered this a little while ago, declared martial law in Nepal and, you know, basically shut off the whole frickin' country. Well, now he's turned off the cell phones. In Kathmandu, Nepal, cell phones aren't ringing these days in the Himalayan nation. Small businessmen can't take orders, children can't phone their parents, and political activists can't call around to organize a decent-sized protest. For the past month, since King Gyanendra seized power and ordered communications links switched off, Nepalese have been learning to live without their cell phones. It's been a difficult lesson. About a third of Nepal's telephone lines are cellular, and while landline phones or internet links were restored a week after the king's surprise announcement, there is no sign that cell phones, the communication method of choice for government's opponents, will be working anytime soon. Look at that. They just turned off the cell phones. Now, you got to ask yourself, what if that happened here? This is why I'm a big fan of, like, FRS radios and things like that. I have not had any business since the mobile phones were shut down, said Krishna Maharajan, who had to sell the tanker truck he once used to deliver water to homes in Kathmandu. I don't know how long this will last, and I can't just go on like this. Maharajan needed his cell phone to take orders since he's always driving around Kathmandu. There are many homes that have serious water shortages. New customers would also call him the number he had painted on the side of his blue tanker. At a time when he should be preparing for the dry summer months ahead, his busiest time of the year, he had to sell his tanker, close his business, and begin looking for another job. Others are suffering too. Nepal has nearly 246,000 cell phone subscribers, a number that has grown dramatically in the 5 years they've been available in Nepal. For most Nepalese, there's no alternative. Getting a landline phone can mean a 5-year wait. Now, I ask you, what would happen if they did that here? What sort of alternative means of communication do we have available? People ask me, you know, they say, Sean, what do you think of all this, you know, convergence that's happening? That's the whole aspect of, you know, everything all combining into one device. I don't like having everything in one device, because if that one device breaks or that one device gets turned off, you wind up getting fucked good and hard. So you want to ask yourself, if that happened here, what would we do? FRS radios much? Go look into a product called a Rhino. It's a sweet piece of kit. Now, in the sick and twisted market, I believe that certain things can be bundled together, like my fries and my Coke. I believe in having a meal that way. You know, if you're going to be getting fries and a burger anyway, why not make it a combo? But you don't really do that with medication, especially prescription medication, because it's supposed to be chosen specifically for you based upon your particular health treatments. You shouldn't only be able to get one drug if you buy a bundle of other drugs. This is absolutely insane. Medication bundles, a drug that could be one of the most promising new heart treatments in a decade, is generating controversy even before it's approved, because its maker, Pfizer, those fucking fantastic Pfizer fucks, plan to sell it only in combination with the company's best-selling cholesterol treatment, Lipitor. What? At a cardiology conference in Orlando, Florida, today, researchers sponsored by Pfizer are expected to present positive new results about a drug which has been shown in preliminary studies to substantially raise levels as what is known as good cholesterol, a novel approach to preventing heart disease. Well, okay, I mean, we don't even know if the drugs are safe anymore, but now they're going to bundle them with other... The new drug, called Torsatrapib, nice catchy name there, still must clear many hurdles before it's approved, including concerns that it may raise blood pressure, a serious side effect for heart medicine. Well, if you raise it, yeah, fuck, don't even get me started. It would not reach the market before 2007, at the earliest. Still, scientists say that the medicine could be an important new treatment, while Wall Street views its success as crucial to the future of Pfizer, the world's largest drug company. Again, who gives a shit? It's not hitting the market until 2007. Why are we getting advertising from Pfizer? And why is this even talking about Wall Street's views of Pfizer? This is about medicine. Pfizer's critics, who include prominent cardiologists, say the company should offer Torsatapib as a standalone pill so their patients can either take it with Lipitor or with similar drugs not from Pfizer that may work better for them. Whoa, what a concept. For some patients, Torsatapib or whatever the fuck it's called might even work best by itself, they say. Well, but they're doctors. You know, what do they know? They only went to school and shit. The company says that selling Torsatapib and Lipitor in one pill makes sense because the two drugs work in complementary ways. Well, that's handy. Complementary means for who? Okay, we're not all like, you know, one mold here. Everyone's very different. I don't know if you've noticed that. And that it has the right to market its medicine as it sees fit. Especially given the huge cost of developing Torsatrapib. Yeah, they're hurting for money. The existing cholesterol drugs, called statins, work by cutting so-called bad cholesterol, which can cause fatty plaques build up in the arteries and lead to heart attacks. But of course, if this drug ramps up your blood pressure and you've already got, you know, fatty buildup and wouldn't that just kind of cause more heart attacks? Thought here, I don't know, I'm just kind of using some layman's terms. In contrast, the good cholesterol that Torsatrapib increases may actually stop the buildup of the plaque, but it does increase your blood pressure. So while it's trying to add more cholesterol to your system, it's also trying to fucking kill you. That's an unfortunate decision on Pfizer's part, said Dr. Michael Crawford. This is why I'm not a doctor, because I'd be the guy in the article saying, that's fucked, said Dr. Sean Kennedy. But that's an unfortunate decision on Pfizer's part, said Dr. Michael Crawford, the chief of clinical cardiology at the University of California, San Francisco, referring to the company's decision to only sell drugs in combination with Lipitor. Quote, it is not going to sit well with people, but you know, they're just going to be crying all the way to the bank, end quote. Now, that's what the guy, that's about as barbed as you're going to get from the chief of clinical cardiology at the University of California when he's saying that, of course, these drug companies only give a shit about their profits. They don't care about people whatsoever. And the fact they're bundling drugs with other drugs? No, that's something you do with fries and a shake. You don't do that with medicine. You know, where is the legislation? Where is government looking at these companies? They should be involved here. Okay, because how else are we going to control these core political fuckers? And, of course, farming by the media. As if we didn't know this. Okay, the reason why I do this show is because people are not getting media that's worth a damn. And we got an article to support that. A lot of local television news is lousy, and who cares? Not many of us, apparently. Polls show that Americans get most of their information about politics and public affairs not from newspapers or from network TV or cable talk radios or the internet, family or friends, but from local television news. Americans like local news, according to surveys regularly touted by the National Association of Broadcasters. It's one of the most profitable slices of the entertainment industry. Entertainment. It's infotainment, pulling in billions from advertisers eager to connect with all those avid viewers. And decades of evidence about toxic effects of media have no apparent effect on what gets broadcast. So nobody cares what it does. Local news may scare people about the mean world beyond their doors, but there is a reason why. If it bleeds, it leads. People can't take their eyes off violence. Fear is a magnet for our attention. It was true when we were hunter-gatherers. It's true when St. Augustine couldn't resist the thrill of the gladiator's mayhem. Every time we rubberneck at a car wreck, we prove it again. Sex, celebrity, novelty and melodrama are simply mesmerizing. Our lizard brains can't help it. And as long as station owners have every incentive to seduce us and no incentive to educate us or to figure out how to make public affairs programming as irresistible as carnage or cat fashion shows, we can expect to be fed this diet no matter what its consequences on our psychology or our society. There it is, right there. Go check that link out, because that pretty much just nails it in one. You know, it's why I do what I do. It's why you are listening right now. True, I'm preaching to the choir, but sometimes it's nice to know why, you know, when you're sitting there with the tinfoil wrapped around your head, that perhaps, you know, you may not be as crazy as all your coworkers think. On to the Daily Hack from Crunch. Very good one. A WOG's Guide to Crypto. Now, it's not actually a WOG's Guide to Crypto. It's not the WOG Guide to Crypto. Don't get all fucking crazy, everybody. Oh, he's saying WOG again. Shut the fuck up. Okay, this is just an easy, free method of crypto, which I'll throw a WOG on it because, hey, it's easy, it's free, and everyone can use it, and it's I'm going to be checking it out. It's very, very cool, and it's a good alternative to paying crypto. It's called NewPG. It's a complete and free replacement for PGP, pretty good protection, because it does not use the patented IDEA algorithm. It can be used by anyone without restrictions. NewPG is an RFC 2440 OpenPGP compliant application. Version 1.0.0 has been released September 7, 1999, and the current stable version is 1.4.0. NewPG is free software. It can be freely used, modified, and distributed under the new general public license. So very, very cool. If you're not currently using crypto, please go out there. Get some crypto on your systems to sort yourself out. And that's all I have for you today. But don't worry, I'll be back tomorrow to make sure you get all the information you need to stay alive. This is a free broadcast brought to you by the fighters against the machine, those who stand in the face of tyranny, and those would be Anonymous, Topek, Jesse, Grey Ghost, Drake, Anthony, Robert, Dual Parallel, Anonymous, Michael, Andrea, Derek, Jesse, Susan, Eric, Tech Freak, Keith, Malcolm, Peter, For Elite, Timor, Peter, Plasmonic Grid, Christopher, Rosalie, Richard, Matt, Greg, WebLife, Evan, David, Brian, Austin, Brian, Jonathan, Adam, Host Mojo, Mainframe, Mark, Jonathan, Trevor, Brandon, Helgon, Art, Diremude, Brandon, Justin, Matthew, Lars, Eric, Anonymous, and Jason. And new subscribers this month were Kevin, Steve, Philip, Steve, Charles, Matt, Brandon, Kevin, and Mark. Thank you so much, guys. And if you would like to help keep this daily news broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the Donate tab. Special thanks to the hard netrunners who helped me get this day today, which would be Astrofix, Sylvanus, PolySci, Ricky Rocket, Foulweir, Psychofish, No Delete, Nyx, Evil Vossenary, Zyzix, Slycat, Mystique, Crunge, Psylich, Bonsai Poppy, Lead Scorch, Pang Machine, Madar, and Visage. No digital baptisms today, but if you'd like one, email me and I'll get one out to you. And special thanks to everyone who sent me all information in media. And if you have access to sensitive information or other pertinent stories, please email them to newsreel, N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L at rantradio.com. Or if you just want to talk to me, same email address. If you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up an album by Frontline Assembly called Millennium. Really good album. And I'm going to leave you with one of my faves from that album called Vigilante, appropriate in today's day and age. Until tomorrow, that's what server said. End of line.
You're not the same. I'm an American. You're a sick asshole.
Feels good to exercise your rights, doesn't it?